Good morning. How many of you have ever smoothly eased into stupidity? That may be the greatest response I've ever gotten in church from a question. That is fantastic. It is really fascinating that if we look at our life and we look at some of the worst choices we made, they started as choices that did not seem that bad. And we slowly drifted from a bad choice, which didn't seem that bad, and we start to kind of just slowly drift in a direction that gets us into trouble. I was at the beach a few years ago, and there was a kid on a raft, one of these little plastic inflatable raft things. And this kid was kind of paddling out, and his mom was on the beach, and they were kind of set up a few feet from where we were. And I heard the mom go, "Hey, don't you go too far out." And the kid was like, I'm fine. And then like a few minutes later, the kid had paddled out a little further. And the mom yelled, "Hey, don't you go too far out." And the kid yells back, I'm fine. It's kind of echoed, you know. And about 5 minutes later, the mom yells, "You're too far out." And he goes, "Help." And the mom couldn't swim, so they sent me. Because I can swim. Apparently the thought was that I was big enough the sharks wouldn't mess with me. So I swam out and grabbed the kid's raft, and we kind of came back in. But the thing that was funny about it was it was never a moment, I think, because I was talking to the kid, we got him back in, and there was never a moment in that process where he made the decision that he was going to paddle out too far. That was never part of the plan. That was never part of the process. It never occurred to him that there was going to be a time when he got too far. It was a gradual process whereby which he slowly drifted further and further out. And the drift was so slow that he didn't even recognize it. And does that not sound like the end point that some of us have found ourselves in over the years, where we find ourselves in a position and we go, "How did I get here? How did this happen to me?" Do you know that of the, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people in this country that suffer with an addiction, do you know that I would argue that probably 0% of them started out thinking, "I'm going to get addicted"? I don't know any alcoholic, and I've known some alcoholics in my life. I've never known an alcoholic that sat down one day and said, "You know what my goal in life is? I want to be an alcoholic. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick this drink up, and I'm going to start working on this process by which I will become a slave to alcohol." I've never known anybody that thought that. I went to high school with people who started smoking marijuana when they were in high school, and I didn't hear any of them when I was in high school, "You know what my goal is one day? My goal one day is to be an addict." Never heard that. I have encountered people who have ended up in bad relationships where they were married to somebody that they probably knew they shouldn't be married to. But when that relationship started, that wasn't the plan, right? It was like, we're not going to get married. I've heard that 100 times. Well, I'm not going to marry this person. And then one day they ended up married to somebody they shouldn't have been married to. And that relationship didn't start with the plan that, "Man, I want to get into a bad marriage." And the warning signs might have been there, but it just was this slow progression towards an end result where one day you go, How did this happen? How did this happen to me? So this morning we're going to look at a passage from Hebrews chapter 2. And this sermon came about kind of the conjunction of a couple of things. Somebody came up to me Thursday after seniors Bible study, and we were talking about some Old Testament penalty, some crime and punishment in the Old Testament. And I started thinking about that question a little bit and working on that. And I also wanted to do kind of a going to college sermon and back to school sermon and back to work sermon for, you know, that kind of would fit this. And all these things kind of coalesced into this passage. Now, this passage in Hebrews chapter 2, the Hebrew writer is giving a warning. And it's really interesting because in the number of times I've studied this passage, this fun thing about Scripture, it's like you'll read something and all of a sudden you'll notice something you've never noticed before. So I want to begin in verse 1, and this is obviously the Hebrew writer is referencing what he wrote in chapter 1 here. He says, for this reason, and the reason was he was talking about how God had ordained the supremacy of Christ. And so he says, for that reason, we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard. We must pay much closer attention to what we have heard. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you find it challenging as in your Christian walk, once you become a Christian, to pay more attention to your faith? We get into this pattern where once we get, and this is a word we love to use in the church. I'm not a big fan of the word, but a lot of people love to use this word, the word saved. Once we get saved, we don't have to pay as much attention, right? Because once we've been saved, we're covered by grace, and therefore I don't really have to pay as much attention now. And you see this phenomena in church all the time. As people get more comfortable in their faith, they become more reckless with it, less passionate about it. We get more comfortable with not praying and not studying our Bible and not going to church. And we've got all the reasons in place. It's like, oh, well, you know, I've been a Christian for years. I've been a Christian long enough. I don't really need to go every Sunday. I've been a Christian long enough. I don't need to pray every day. I've been a Christian long enough. I don't need to read my Bible all the time. Because I've got this thing figured out. I got it under control. I've gotten comfortable with it. I know how it works. And the Hebrew writer says, look, for all the reasons I just told you, we need to pay closer attention to what we've heard. Now, why would the Hebrew writer warn these Jewish Christians that they need to pay closer attention to the word if they're already Christians? Why would he do that? Right? Because how many of you have ever known someone who got in a car accident because they were careless? And you know what? A lot of times it's the insurance guy in the back just went, yeah, I know plenty of those people. Here's what's funny about carelessness. There's two different types of carelessness. There's carelessness from people who don't know better. That's usually the younger drivers. And there's carelessness from the people who've been driving so long, they think they don't have to pay attention anymore. Right? Well, you've been driving so long, you're like, I know what I'm doing. You know, I got to tell me, I've been doing this. This is my favorite quote to my children. I've been driving since before you were born. In fact, the night you were born, I drove like Mario Andretti to the hospital. I broke a speed record from our house to the hospital while my wife was in labor in the other seat. I'm going, please don't have this baby in this car. But we hit a certain point in our lives where we feel so comfortable with our skills in certain areas that we can get careless. We can get lax. And so the Hebrew writers, listen, you guys, you need to pay more attention, much closer attention to what you've heard. Okay? So for those of us who are here today, if you're at home listening online and you're like, okay, so what is the application here? As I mature as a Christian, my maturity as a Christian doesn't mean that I'm now able to study less. It means I should be studying more. I should be paying more attention to the word. That's what spiritual maturity does. Spiritual maturity doesn't make me where I don't need the word anymore. Spiritual maturity means I'm better equipped to study it and understand it. But we have this mentality sometimes in the church. It's like, well, we've arrived. I'm there. The challenge was getting saved. And so once I do that, now I can just coast. Now I can just coast. I can take it easy. But the Hebrew writer says, look, there's a reason for this. He says, for this reason we must pay much closer attention to what we've heard. And then listen to the excuse. He says, so that we do not drift away from it. We don't drift away from it. You know how many people this morning are sitting at home who used to be faithful church attenders? Could you even begin to guess how many people grew up in church, faithfully went to church, were a part of the church, maybe even a Christian, I mean, just a devout Christian, man. They were serious about it. They were passionate about it. It mattered to them. And then somehow they went from there to, I don't even go anymore. I don't even care anymore. How do you think that happened? Do you think just one day they said, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. I would dare say for the vast majority of those people, that's not how that happened at all. You know how it likely happened? They missed a Sunday, and then they were back, and then they missed two or three Sundays. How many of you have ever heard somebody use this phrase? Well, you know, I got out of the habit of coming. You ever heard that? You ever heard anybody say that? Some of you may have said it yourself. I got out of the habit of coming. I got out of the habit of coming, and so I stopped coming. And then after I've been gone a certain amount of time, it occurred to me that I still seem to be okay. I mean, I hadn't been to church in 2-3 months, and I still feel okay. Things are still good. I'm still good. And so we get complacent, and we get lazy, and we get comfortable. And it was never a thing where we said, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's a slow drift. And a little warning to those of our students who are going to Bible college, that this is a real danger to Bible college students. When your classes are in Bible, and your Bible study becomes your class, or potentially eventually your vocation, It's an easy excuse to go, I don't need to read my Bible because that's kind of what I do all the time. If your only Bible study is in sermon preparation, that's usually not a good thing. And you ask any minister, he'll tell you. And a lot of guys have gone through that where it's like, you know, you wake up one day and realize, you know, I haven't just sat down and read my Bible to read it for my own benefit in years. And so it happens to mature faithful Christians where we enter this place where we just start to slowly drift, and we're not paying attention to the warning signs because we still feel really safe. That kid on that raft had gotten further and further out, and he's, you know, when mom would yell, he'd look back and go, I'm good. And he was good until what? Until he wasn't, right? He was good until he wasn't. And that happens in so many areas of our life where we wake up one morning and we think, I'm good. I got this under control. I'm good. And then we wake up one morning and we go, I'm not good. How did I get here? How did this happen? And Satan is the master of this, is that he gets us engaged in the slow drift. Any of you ever put on 20 pounds? I did. 5 times. I got a closet. Look, you could go in my closet, and I wouldn't encourage this, but you could. Thanks, Jimmy. But you could go in my closet, and you could. It's like, you know how they have in a tree, when you cut a tree down, it has rings that show you the age? You could do that in my closet. I got a set of clothes that I had that I said, you know, one day I'm going to get back into these. And then I got the next set of clothes after those that I said, I'm going to get back in these. I got clothes in my closet that I am four stages of, I'm going to get back into these away from where I am now. And they're still there. And if I tried to put them on, I would weep. Because I was like, I used to fit in these. I used to fit in these. And you know what? I didn't go to bed one night at 230 pounds and wake up the next day at 290. That's not how it happened, right? When you gain weight, that's not how it happens, right? It's a slow, gradual thing. And you're like, you know, your eating habits change and your metabolism changes. But you're like, I got this. I got it. And we say stuff like, I got to change. I got to change. But it's so slow, the process is so slow that we just don't pay attention. And then one day you look in the mirror and go, when did I eat Stuart? I swallowed him whole. It's like he's, what happened? How did I get, I'm puffy. I'm not puffy, fat. When did this happen? How did it happen? I don't ever remember sitting down and eating an 80-pound meal. Everybody in this room knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's not necessarily about weight. It could be about any number of things. Any of you ever kind of just look in the mirror one day and go, when did I get old? And you know what? That happened a second at a time. It's a slow, gradual process. And so every one of us should be able to relate with what the Hebrew writer is warning us about, right? Every one of us should be able to relate to this. He says, you got to pay closer attention to what you've heard, because if you don't, you're going to start to drift away from it. You're going to start to drift away from it. And one day, you're going to wake up and you're going to be so far away from the Christian that you used to be. And you're going to go, how did this happen? How did I get here? When did this take place? I don't even understand. In verse 2, he says, for if the word spoken through angels proved unalterable and every transgression and disobedience received a just penalty. Now, we're going to stop there. I know it's in the middle of a sentence, but it's a long sentence. When we were talking about this Old Testament thing. One of the things that is really important to understand about the Old Testament is the Old Testament shows us what life is like without the grace of God. And the Hebrew writer is reminding these Jewish Christians. He said, if the word spoken through angels was unalterable, and we're talking about the Old Testament now, and every transgression and disobedience received what? Not just a penalty, but the just penalty. Scripture tells us that the wages of sin is what? Death. So this is death penalty, right? This is death penalty. And so the Hebrew writer says, guys, look, you need to remember back in the Old Testament, if you're not worried about drifting away from what you've received, he said, think about this. What are you drifting towards? That's always an important question, right? If you're drifting towards something, it's always important to know what you're drifting towards. So he says, look, if you're a Christian and you are under the grace of God, if you are covered by God's grace, by the blood of his son Jesus, if you're covered by that and you begin to drift away from it, what are you drifting towards? Well, right, because if you drift away from Christ's sacrifice, What happens to those who are outside of that sacrifice? What happens to those who've not accepted his grace? Well, it's the Old Testament, right? If you don't accept the grace of Christ, then what you're drifting towards is that time when every transgression and disobedience received a just penalty. So what does that mean? Everyone who exists in a world where they receive the just penalty for their sin, what happens to every one of those people? They die and they're separated from Christ for eternity. Why? Because that's the just penalty for sin, right? Scripture tells us that repeatedly. The just penalty for our sin is death. The wages of sin are death. Paul makes that abundantly clear. So the Hebrew writer says, guys, think about what you're drifting towards. If you're not paying closer attention to what you've heard and you start to drift away from Christ, what are you drifting towards? Well, because Christ is in the center, if you're drifting any direction from away from him, you're drifting towards a life where all of your sins, your transgressions, and your disobedience get you what you deserve. And you're not covered by that grace anymore. And when you drift outside of the cone of that grace, you drift back into death. And some of you are sitting here going, yeah, that would never happen to me though. You know how many people are in hell who said that would never happen to me? You have any idea how many people are in hell who are probably in hell right now thinking, yeah, that would never happen to me. I would never let that happen to me. How many of you can think back to a time when you were younger? And if you ask your younger self if you would ever have ended up in a situation that the older you ended up in, that the younger you would have said, that could never happen to me, right? That's never going to happen to me. I'm too smart to get into that kind of relationship. I was sitting in the office one time in a counseling session with a young person who was in an abusive relationship. And she said something to me which struck me. She said, you know, I had friends in relationships like this, and I always looked at them like they were stupid. I was like, how stupid are you? Just leave. Just leave. And she goes, I was so arrogant in how I looked at those people because I couldn't understand how they let themselves get in that situation. She said, and now I'm in that situation. And I don't know how it happened. I don't understand how it happened. How did I get here? How did I get here? And I didn't have a good answer. And I'm almost 100% certain that a number of you in this room have had some moment in your life where you sat down and you asked yourself, how did I get into this mess? How did I get here? And when you look back at the series of events that led you to where you are, there was no one moment where you made the decision that I want my life to be this. What it was a series of warning signs that you ignored because the drift was so slow you just didn't even notice it. You weren't paying attention. When I was a kid, one of the fun things about being a preacher's kid is you hear lots of great stories as long as they're not about you. I remember one my dad used to tell. He used to pull this out in a sermon every once in a while. It was one of my favorite stories. I have no idea if it really happened or not. I don't remember, but I do remember the story. He used to tell this story about this eagle, and this eagle that was flying over a river, and there was this, it was up in Alaska, I think, or Canada, but there was this rabbit that was frozen in a piece of ice, and it was floating down the river. And this eagle swooped down and started using its claws to try to get through the ice to get to the rabbit. And there was waterfall up ahead. And the eagle was trying to get through the ice before it got to the waterfall. And finally, at the last minute, the eagle realized that he wasn't going to get through the ice, and he couldn't get through there. And he waited till the last minute to decide to fly away. And as the big thing of ice was getting ready to go over the falls, the eagle realized that he had been on that thing so long, his claws had gotten stuck in the ice. And the rabbit went over, and the eagle went over, and the eagle died. I still remember that story. I heard that story. I probably heard that story in Portsmouth. I probably heard it in Bainbridge. Probably heard it at Cabin Swamp and at Christian Hope. I heard that story, but I never forgot that story. And the moral of that story is that sometimes we just sit there and we wait because we think we're in control, and at the right minute we're gonna course correct. And sometimes we wait too long, and we find ourselves in a bad space. So the Hebrew writer is warning me. He's pleading with him. He says, if the word is spoken through angels proved unaudible, and every transgression and disobedience received a just penalty. Verse 3, how will we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? Now, one of the things I noticed in this text that I had not really noticed before, a lot of times when we read that text, even though the word neglect is always the word that's there, it's never changed, unless maybe you have a different translation. But he doesn't say, how will we escape if we reject so great a salvation? He doesn't say reject. He's not talking about the unsaved. And for years when I read this, I just kind of read it that way, even though that's not what it says. That's just kind of how I read it. I was like, oh, well, how are you going to escape? How are you going to escape that penalty if you reject Christ? But this isn't about rejecting Christ. This is about neglecting Christ. That's the word he uses. And the Hebrew writer uses it for a purpose. Now, when you hear the word neglect, what do you think of? What does that word conjure up in your mind when you neglect something? What do you think of?
You just don't do it.
Ignore. You ignore it. Can you neglect something you don't have? No, you have to possess something to neglect it. So you have this thing around the house that you neglect. Any of you ever neglected a relationship? Probably. You ever neglected something in the house that you knew needed to be fixed, but you kept putting it off until it went from a small problem to a big one? You ever done that? It's like when you're driving down the road and that check engine light comes on, and you're like, that probably don't mean nothing. My last car, that thing stayed on for 7 years. That probably doesn't mean nothing. So you neglect it, right? And then one day what happens? Engine blows up. You're like, oh, shouldn't have neglected that. The Hebrew writer here is not talking to the unsaved. He's not talking to non-Christians. He's talking to Christians. And listen, Christians, if you're in this room today and you identify as a Christian, listen very carefully to this warning. The Hebrew writer wants to ask you a question. How are you going to escape? And escape what? Will escape the transgression and disobedience penalty. How are you going to escape that if you're neglecting your salvation? Now, how do you neglect salvation? Right? If you become a Christian, you're saved. Then you're saved, right? So, how do you neglect salvation if you already have it? And some theologies would say, well, that just doesn't even make sense. You can't do that. But what is the Hebrew writer warning them about? He says, you have salvation. You have escaped this penalty for transgression and disobedience. But how are you going to escape it if you neglect the salvation that you have? Now, if you're just sitting there and you're reading this, you're sitting at home and go, okay, so I'm reading this. It says, how am I going to escape this punishment if I neglect my salvation? Okay, well, I've already been saved. So what is the Hebrew writer warning me about here? Why don't you tell me? What do you think the Hebrew writer is so passionately warning these people about?
Being lukewarm.
Being lukewarm. Quenching the spirit. It's like, man, you know, once upon a time I was so passionate about God, and now I'm just like, you know what? I'm saved and I'm on cruise control. I'm on cruise control. And I'm just coasting. I'm coasting to the finish line. That's what I'm doing now. I'm just coasting. Because my salvation is assured, right? And so I don't even have to pay attention to it. I've got it. And I don't have to take care of it. It takes care of itself. It's just sitting over there in the corner. And it's right there. And I don't have to do anything with it. I'm good. I've got my card and everything. I'm good. How many of you have ever had a relationship that went bad because it got neglected? You ever had one of those? And I don't just mean like a marriage or a dating relationship. I've known parents and children who had strained relationships because the relationship got neglected. Friendships that are taken for granted. You ever had one of those? We understand this from a relationship standpoint that we can have a relationship and we can take that relationship for granted. We can neglect that relationship, and at some point we realize that that relationship isn't a relationship anymore. And that's what the Hebrew writer is warning us about. He says, look, you entered into a relationship with Christ. When you did that, your penalty for transgression and disobedience went away. The penalty for transgression and disobedience goes away when you're in relationship with Christ, but that is contingent on that relationship being what? Maintained. And when we don't maintain that relationship, when we neglect it and we treat it with disrespect. If you go back to verse 1, if we drift away from it. Sitting in the office with a couple one time, having some problems. I said, so what's going on? In stereo. It was almost like they'd rehearsed it. This is what they said. We've drifted apart. We've grown apart. I said, how'd that happen? And they looked at me and they said, what do you mean? I said, how did you grow apart? Well, we just did. I said, you didn't notice it happening? I mean, you just woke up one morning and realized, we're apart. Is that how that happened? Well, I'm like, how does that happen? How do you grow apart? How long you guys been married? What, 7, 8 years? I said, how did you grow apart? Did it happen overnight? Like one morning? Did you just wake up and realize men are from Mars, women are from Venus? We're on different planets. Is that what happened? Well, no. I said, then how did it happen? If you were growing apart, how did you not notice it and try to fix it? They were like, you're mean. I said, well, that's my job. My job is not to tell you that what you're saying is fine. That's not, the job is to fix it. Now, what I was trying to get them to understand is, you know how people grow apart? And if you've ever been in a relationship where this happened, you will probably not like what I'm getting ready to say, but that's okay because my job is to be mean. with the love of Christ. You know how relationships grow apart? You're not paying attention to it. Because if you were paying attention to it and you noticed that it was growing apart, what would you do? You'd fix it. You'd fix it. That's what you would do. If you noticed it was growing apart, you'd say, hey, this thing's growing apart. We better get this thing wrapped back up. We need to start developing some things that we can get closer, grow back together instead of growing apart. But what happens is growing apart is generally symptomatic of a different problem, which is neglect. How did you wake up one morning and realize you were so far apart? You know how that happened? Because you haven't been paying attention. You're like the kid on the raft that just looked up one day and went, whoa, I am way too far out. How did this happen? You can't grow apart overnight, right? That takes time, doesn't it? And this is what the Hebrew writer is warning us about. Don't wake up one day and look at your relationship with Christ and say, wow, we've grown apart. I wonder how this happened. How did this happen? I have, in the course of my life, I've known a lot of people that were Christians when they went off to college. And then something happened. And there may have been a few who had kind of said, when I get to school, I'm not going to be a Christian anymore. There probably were a few of those. But the vast majority of them, I don't think that was their plan. I don't think they sat there in the car the day they left for college and went, I can't wait to get to college and forget Jesus. I don't think that's how it started. But that is the end point for a lot of them. I doubt there's a person in this room that doesn't know somebody today that used to be a faithful Christian who's not anymore. And if you ask them if that was their plan, they would probably say, no, I didn't plan it. And then they'd probably say something like this, it just happened. That is what the Hebrew writer is warning the church about. And what, by proxy, I want us to be warned about today. All of us, not just you, me, all of us. Whether you're going to a Bible college or East Carolina or Pitt Community College, or whether you're going back to work, or whether you're retired, none of that. Whatever stage of life you're in, the Hebrew writer is warning you about something really important. He says, look, don't drift away from Christ. Don't neglect that relationship. Don't believe the lie that because once you've got Christ, he's always there. Because that's not how this thing works. We enter into a relationship with Christ just like we do with anybody else. And if you neglect that relationship, the Hebrew writer says, how are you going to escape? How are you going to escape the just penalty for transgression and disobedience if you allow this relationship with Christ to drift? The praise team is going to come up and lead us in our communion hymn this morning. And I want to, as they come up to do that, I want to leave you with a challenge this morning. It is again, a uniquely individual challenge. No one can answer this for you, but I want you to take stock this morning and ask yourself a real simple question. If Christ is the beach and I'm on a raft, am I moving towards him? Or am I drifting away from him? Because in reality, you're probably doing one or the other. It's probably not a static situation. You're probably either moving towards him or you're moving away from him. And if you're moving away from him, if that continues, at some point, you're going to wake up one morning and realize you've moved so far away from him, you don't know how to get back to him. And the Hebrew writer says, when that happens, then what are you going to do? What's going to be the sacrifice that's going to save you from your disobedience and your transgressions?